Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Lay Down. My name is Ryan and today I'll be sitting down with Alexis Henderson, the author of The Year of the Witching. Alexis Henderson is a speculative fiction writer with a penchant for dark fantasy, witchcraft, and cosmic horror. She grew up in one of America's most haunted cities, Savannah, Georgia, which instilled in her a lifelong love of ghost stories. Currently, Alexis resides in the sun-soaked marshland of Charleston, South Carolina. Alexis and I will be discussing her debut novel, The Year of the Witching, which has been compared to The Handmaid's Tale meets The Witch. It tackles themes of Puritanism and patriarchy, and her vivid characterization and vibrant narrative will have you holding your breath until the very last page. In the lands of Bethel, where the prophet's word is law, Emmanuel Moore's very existence is blasphemy. Her mother's union with an outsider of a different race cast her once proud family into disgrace, so Emmanuel does her best to worship the father, follow holy protocol, and lead a life of submission, devotion, and absolute conformity like all the other women in the settlement. But a mishap lures her into the forbidden dark woods surrounding Bethel, where the first prophet once chased and killed four powerful witches. Their spirits are still lurking there, and they bestow a gift on Emmanuel, the journal of her dead mother, who Emmanuel is shocked to learn once sought sanctuary in the wood. Fascinated by the secrets in the diary, Emmanuel finds herself struggling to understand how her mother could have consorted with the witches. But when she begins to learn grim truths about the church and its history, she realizes the true threat to Bethel is its own darkness, and she starts to understand that if Bethel is to change, it must begin with her. Before we jump into my interview with Alexis, I am going to share with you a short excerpt from the audiobook of The Year of the Witching. Please enjoy.
That evening, the Moores gathered for their usual Sabbath dinner. Martha tended a bubbling vat of chicken stew that hung on an iron hook above the crackling fire, mopping sweat from her brow with the back of her hand. While she hunched over the hearth, Anna mixed batter bread with both hands, folding in fistfuls of flax seeds and crushed walnuts, singing hymns as she worked. Emmanuel ducked between the two of them, taking on different tasks and trying her best to be of help. She was clumsy in the kitchen, but she did what she could to aid them. Anna, ever cheerful, was the first to break the silence.
"It was a good service this morning, wasn't it?"
Emmanuel set a pewter plate down at the head of the table before her grandfather's empty chair.
"That it was."
Martha said nothing. Anna plunged her fists into the bread dough again.
"When the prophet spoke, I felt like the air had been sucked right out of me. He's a true man of the Father, that one. More so than other prophets, even. We're lucky to have him."
Emmanuel set one spoon beside Martha's plate and another beside Honor's bowl. A little wooden thing she'd carved and polished some 3 summers ago when the child had been no bigger than a minnow in Anna's womb. For Anna's eldest, Glory, she reserved the brass spoon she liked best, an antique Martha had bought from a market peddler years ago. Glory, like her mother, had an appetite for pretty things, ribbons and lace and sweets and other delights the Moores couldn't afford. But when she could, Emmanuel tried her best to oblige the girl with little tokens. There were so few pretty things left in the house. Most of their treasures and trinkets had been sold during the thick of the winter, in an attempt to make up for the bad reap and all the livestock they'd lost to sickness the past summer. But if Emmanuel had anything to say about it, Glory would have her spoon, a small token to offset their world of lack. When the meal was prepared, Martha carried the vat of stew to the table and set it down with a loud thump that carried through the house. At the sound, Honor and Glory raced into the dining room, eager to fill their seats and eat. The wives sat next, Emmanuel's grandmother, Martha, claiming her place at the opposite end of the table, as was custom, and Anna, second wife of Emmanuel's grandfather, claiming the seat beside her husband's empty chair. After a few long moments, there was the groan of hinges, the sound of a door opening, then the pained and shuffling racket of Abram making his way down the stairs. Her grandfather was having a bad day. Emmanuel could tell by the sound of his gait, the way his stiff foot dragged across the groaning floorboards as he moved toward the table. He had skipped church again that morning, making it the third Sabbath he'd missed in a month. Once, long ago, Abram had been an apostle, and a powerful one, too. He had been the right hand of Simon Chambers, the prophet who served before the current prophet, Grant Chambers, had been chosen and ordained. As such, Abram had once owned one of the seven estates in the sacred holy grounds, and he had wielded the father's gift of discernment. At age 19, he married Martha. The two of them were well yoked, both in age and in status. But despite this, the father did not bless them with children for a long time. In fact, after years of trying, Abram and Martha were only able to conceive Miriam, and her birth was succeeded by a series of stillborns, all of them sons. Many later claimed that Miriam's birth damned the children who were born after her, said that her very existence was a plague to the good Moor name. On account of Miriam's crimes, Abram had been stripped of his title as apostle and all the lands that went with it. The Moorstead, which had once been a rolling range, so big it rivaled the prophets, was divided up among the other apostles and nearby farmers, who picked it apart like vultures do a carcass. Abram had been left with a small fragment of the land he once owned, shadowed by the same rambling forest to which he'd lost his daughter. Such was the life he lived now, in ridicule and squalor, scraping together an existence from the meager reap of pastures and blighted cornfields that were his only claim.
The audiobook is narrated by Brianna Collette. It is available now on Libro FM. As always, our listeners who are new to Libro FM can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit when they sign up for a new membership by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout. So do take advantage of that deal. Without further ado, here is my interview with Alexis Henderson. Alexis Henderson, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me today.
Thank you so much.
So The Year of the Witching is your debut novel. What's it been like publishing your first book in 2020?
I'm really touched by how kind everyone has been amidst all of this. And yeah, just that has been the highlight of my year, I think. And it's been really kind of getting me through the tougher days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely been kind of a crazy time for debut authors, right? It's like just in general, the general climate of the world and then global pandemic just making everything like,
well, good luck. Yeah. Fingers crossed that it all works out. But like, yeah. Yeah.
So it's so funny because I was first introduced to your book, I think by, it might've been your publicist sent me an email that was like, hey, I think you'd like this book. She was like, it's, you know, like a diverse feminist fantasy with witches. I was like, I'm sold. What? I don't.
God. My people.
I was like, sign me up. Tell me more, I guess. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what compelled you to write this book initially and how you think it'll resonate with readers today.
Yeah. So originally, I just kind of got this image of a girl crouching in the middle of the forest at the foot of this beast, and she had the body of a woman and the head of a deer skull. And I kind of followed my curiosity and just kind of pursued that and tried to build the world around it, or at least sort of understand the world that kind of felt like it already existed. And I was just the detective trying to put the pieces together. Through that process, I was sort of seeing the darkness of the world through Emmanuel's eyes, and it was kind of being revealed to her as it was being revealed to me. So it was kind of in a way like this dark coming of age in which this girl was kind of realizing the depravity of her own world. And I was having that experience along with her. So, you know, at the end of the story, I did kind of understand or realize maybe for the first time, like the implications of the narrative and the story that I was trying to tell and the things that it spoke to. So I hope that, like, you know, readers sort of take away like the importance of kind of speaking up for yourself and speaking up for those who maybe can't speak up for themselves as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There are definitely, you definitely touch on a lot of sort of like social injustices and things like that, which I've been seeing a lot in fiction recently. What do you think is that sort of role of and sort of power of fiction in bringing about social change, because we have seen a lot of it in the last few years. It's like these kind of bigger plot points in across all genres.
Yeah, you know, I think fiction is kind of like an exercise in empathy. You're putting yourself in the body of someone maybe who's different than you. And so I think that we have like a lot to learn from that. There's a very active way that you're kind of engaging with experiences that aren't your own when you allow yourself to be kind of swept away by a book. So I think that fiction has such an important role in kind of educating people about experiences they wouldn't otherwise be able to live.
Yeah, for sure. So you chose specifically speculative fiction and the horror genre, which I love. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about maybe why you chose that genre to tell this story, or if it just is sort of your genre the way it's my genre. Maybe that's just how it came about.
I've always had a fascination with kind of dark things. And I think it's because I'm deeply anxious and it allows me to have this kind of contained, safe, environment in which I can explore my own fear. And I think to some extent, I feel like I'm conquering it a little bit by being scared and kind of indulging in fear. But I do think that was kind of the basis for why I chose to tell this story within through a horror lens. But I also think it's just, it addresses things that are horrific and terrible. And maybe the true horror of this story is in all of like the cosmic horror witch elements, but it's like kind of the way that it mirrors the darkness of our own world. I think that's what's most frightening to me about the book. And I think kind of juxtaposing all this dark, grotesque imagery with real concrete horrors that like we're all unfortunately so familiar with, it kind of forces us to ask the question, like, what is the true thing that we are most afraid of, or what should we be the most afraid of? What is the true evil?
Yeah. I think that's part of why I love horror so much, is that so often it's not the actual monster that's the scariest thing, right? It's like a bigger theme that, yeah. Yeah, I took a zombie class in college and it was all about, I know it was the coolest class ever. And it was all about how like, yeah, okay, like in these zombie movies, it's like the zombies are the villains, but it's like, really, it's about this bigger thing that we're not talking about, right? And yeah, I think
that sounds like the coolest class.
It was the best class ever.
Oh my god! Completely, I would love to take that class.
Yeah, it was amazing. But yeah, I think horror really lends itself to that because you can be like, oh, very surface level, like no, it's just scary because of X, Y, or Z. But it's like, oh, but there's way like deeper themes here that are much scarier. Mm. And you know, I think we've definitely seen this resurgence of popularity for horror and witches too. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I definitely have. I mean, I'm reading like 3 witch books right now.
I think there's something about women sort of claiming their own power and the implications of that, that witches embody. I think before, witches were kind of just seen as villains and it was very black and white. But with time, I think witches have become more complicated. I would say more interesting characters in that I think we're kind of more sympathetic to them, or we understand them more. I think I find it very empowering to see women who take their rage and channel it into something, even if they're not kind of like representing like the perfect woman or the perfect survivor, as if that's a thing that even exists, but they just kind of indulge in their own anger. And I think that that's empowering.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, because I feel like we definitely used to see witches portrayed as sort of like the sin of women, right? It's like, how dare they have opinions and things? And now they're very much, at least in recent books and movies and things like that, I feel like it's way more like celebratory, like, yeah, no, use that rage, like use that feminism. And
yeah,
I love that.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm reading right now Alex E. Harrow's new book, which is The Once and Future Witches.
Oh god, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, it is really good. And it's similarly to yours, it's like these witches who are like, you know what, we have power and we're gonna use it. Like, it's cathartic and awesome. And
oh man, I definitely had some cathartic moments reading your book. I was like, this is so great. Oh my God. Yeah, so, and sort of touching on that, I wonder if you have any kind of further thoughts on sort of the way witches used to be portrayed versus now, because there is a big resurgence of witches.
Yeah, I do think, you know, a lot of it, of course, it's probably social, you know, with the Me Too movement. I think that people kind of do seek comfort in these portrayals of women that are complex and powerful, you know, witches, I think, represent for a lot of people women who've been through great trial or are great struggle. And I think that there's something freeing about the fact that witches aren't trying to be the perfect, you know, survivor of the things that they've been through. They're just kind of, they're taking what they have to work with and using it to free themselves or to claim power that they might not have had before. And I think that for a lot of people, we look to that and we're like, yes, like that is just, it's an idea that I think that, you know, many women want to like embody this idea that we can take all of our hurt and pain and channel it into something that makes our futures better.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that you would want potential readers of your book to know, like going into your book? Like, how would you sell it? I know how I would sell it, but how would you sell it?
I wish I could credit this person, but they described it as a satanic Anne of Green Gables.
That's which awesome.
I love. I know. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, so I think that's kind of like, like it's got the pastoral, like if you like historical fiction, all of that is there, but it's kind of married with these like dark elements. It's dark, it's bloody, it's spooky. And you know, it's not a book that I think is for everyone, but certainly if you like the dark things and that's your cup of tea or you just want to be scared, it's a good book to pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I've been seeing a lot of, because there's so much buzz coming out about it. I'm so excited for you. But I've definitely been seeing a lot of comparisons to like The Handmaid's Tale and like The Witch, like the movie The Witch, which is pretty spot on. And I kind of love that it does have that very like puritanical setting, but then it takes these turns that you're like, yeah, that's how I really wanted it to go. Awesome. So what is next for you as an author? You've got this amazing debut. It's getting all this awesome buzz. What's next for you?
I'm writing the sequel right now. Yay! So I'm super excited to be working on that and to kind of continue Emmanuel's story and to continue exploring the world as well. So yeah, it's my focus right now.
Oh, I was so hoping you were going to say that. It ended and I was like, ooh, I really hope there's a sequel coming.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm happy people are excited for it. It spurs me onward when it comes to writing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm so excited for more about Emmanuel and Ezra. And oh my God, I'm so excited. It's cool. So I have the physical copy and then I also, I listened to the audiobook of it, which was phenomenal. I don't know if you had a chance to listen.
I haven't heard it yet.
It's really good. And I was just totally pulled in. Like I couldn't stop.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. This is going to be a hot book this year.
Thank you.
And luckily it's sort of coming out where a lot of bookstores are kind of like testing reopening right now. So it's like it kind of came out at the perfect time during this crazy time. Yeah. Like, 'cause my bookstore, we were closed to the public for a really, really long time. And then it was like, we opened to the public and that Tuesday your book came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to a bookstore for the first time. I went to Barnes & Noble a couple days ago, but I went to an indie that had reopened yesterday. And when I walked into the indie, it's just different walking into an indie bookstore. And I was just like, oh, breath of fresh air. It's so great that, we can go again. And then these places are open. I missed it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. We've missed having customers in and it's really nice. And now you get to see your book on the shelf.
Oh, which is so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I think that's all I have for you, Alexis. But I did just want to, again, say just congratulations on such an amazing debut.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I had such a fun time talking to you.
Thank you so much for chatting with me. It was great meeting you.
Great meeting you too.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks again to Alexis Henderson for sitting down with me remotely to chat about her amazing debut novel, The Year of the Witching. It is available now, and I'll make sure to put links to that in the show notes. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and I'll be sure to put those links in the show notes as well. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!